told you yesterday, did I not?
No, but it would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm almost sure, Phil, I told you, may not remember, but I told you I'm going to do the Sugya of the Shir of Lula.
I think I told you.
All right. So, Abosai, we're going to review the Bryce on the bottom of Lamed Gimel, Amid Beis. And we're talking now about the Arava. And the Torah says, Arve Nachal. So the two things that we want to emphasize here. Number one is that the word Arve is in plural. And number two, that the word Nachal seems to indicate that the Arava grows near the Nachal. But we've already seen in the Mishnah that Shalbal is Kshera, that if you find an Arava that grows in an irrigated field, which means it's far away from the Nachal, it's Kshera. So the question is, how do we know this? Because it says Arve Nachal, which seems to indicate that it's growing near the Nachal. So the Brisa says, Tarabonon, Arve Nachal Hagdelim Al HaNachal. And Rashi says that this teaches us that there's a mitzvah, if all things are equal, and you have two choices in front of you. One is an Arava that grows near the riverbanks, and the other is an Arava that grew in your backyard or grew up in the mountain area. Then choose the one that grows near the riverbank. That's called lemitzvah. Lemitzvah, Rashi says that even though Shalbal is Kshera, but that's only in a fallback position. And the reason why we know it's Kshera is because of the plural of the word Arve, as we'll see now in the Dover Acher. But Rashi's Chiddush here is, and the other Rishonim don't accept this Rashi, the Rush really fights against Rashi tooth and nail. Rashi's of the opinion that if all things are equal, which is the ideal Arava that you should take?
Arve Nachal from a Nachal.
Correct, that it grows next door to the Nachal. That's if all things are equal. Dover Acher, the Brisa says, let's go back to the Pasuk again, look at it a second time. Arve Nachal, She'oleshala, its leaf is Mashuch Kinachal. Was that, Jeff, ecliptical? Was that the word? No.
Elliptical.
Let me just write that word. Elliptical. We just want to make sure we have that elliptical. Okay. So that's the Nachal, not as a physical entity. We're not talking about the Nachal now as a river, but rather Nachal as a shape. And the shape of the Nachal is elliptical. Okay. So the leaves of the Arava have to be elliptical like a Nachal. We'll soon see that a tzaftzafa, which is posel in the Mishnah, does not have this elliptical shape. Its leaves are round in shape. Now, I don't think that there is a contradiction of conflict here between the first interpretation and the second interpretation. In other words, the Brisa here, I think, is offering two possibilities as to how to interpret Arve Nachal. Where the word Nachal should be taken literally, and that's the way Rashi took it, so that the Arava grows near the Nachal, or the Arava should be taken more figuratively in terms of the Tzura, and it should be an Ola Shalom Moshul Kenachal. Tanya Idach, now the Gemara quotes a second Braisa, Arve Nachal, Ein Li Ela Arve Nachal. I would have thought that the Pasuk only refers to an Arava that grows next to the river, and that's exclusive, meaning no other Arava could be kosher, and that would exclude again the case of either an irrigated field, which is called Baal, or an Arava that grows in a mountainous area, not near any river. So therefore, Arve Nochal Shel Baal V'Shel Horim Minayin. How do we know in the case of Shel Baal V'Shel Horim? Tamalomar Arve Nachal Mikol Makom. And Rashi points out here the last two words on the page, the Lashon Ravin, that the Torah could have said Lashon Yachid. The Torah deliberately used the plural to tell you Mikol Makom. Mikol Makom is a phrase that means we expand the scope. That's called a ribui. And in this case, the ribui is to tell you that not only an Arava that grows near the river, but any Arava, as long as it's an Arava, and it could grow in a mountainous area, it might grow in an irrigated field far away from the river, and it's kosher. Now at this point we're going to start Daf Lamed Daled Omer Aleph, which we did yesterday, but let's go over it again. Abishol Omer, Abishol is of the opinion that this ribui of Arve is telling us that the Arava could be used not for one mitzvah, but for two different mitzvahs. Shtayim, achas lelulav, achas lemigdash. So outside the Beis HaMikdash, we took an Arve Nachal, we took the Arava together with the lulav. And that's the mitzvah lekachtem lochem. But in the Mikdash itself, there was a special mitzvah that's derived here from the plural word arve, to take the arava and walk around the mizbeach on the Chag HaSukkos, on the Chol HaMoed, you know, it's all 7 days, even on Chol HaMoed, with the arava. Now here I saw a very interesting note. One of the Chachmei Sfarad at the time, the Rishonim, was the Ra'ah, Rabbeinu Aaron Alevi, and he was of the opinion that when Abishol says V'achas L'migdash, he means that you take the Arava together with the Lulav in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, whereas all Rishonim other than the Ra'ah, they interpret that they walked around the Mizbeach during all 7 days of the Chag with the Arava, and that's all they had in their hands was the Arava. Abishol, according to the interpretation of the Ra'ah, is adding achas lemigdash in addition to the lulav, meaning in migdash you took the arava together with the dalet minim, which would mean that according to the Ra'ah, how many aravas did you have? You had the aravas that were together in the agad with the dalet minim, and then on top of that you took a separate arava for the mitzvah of hakofas hamizbeach. So I'll read to you his language. He says, "Shemimigdash tzarch lekachas gam harava milvad meharava im haluav." Very interesting. Now I noticed on Hoshana Rabbah, I don't know if you've ever seen this, that there are two stages in the procession. At one stage, we have the dalet minim, and at another stage, we pick up the arava. And I also noticed that some people will take up the arava together with the dalet minim at the same time, and then later on they put down the dalet minim and they hold on to the arava for the kol mevaser. And it's interesting because if there is such a bona fide minog, we'd have to check it out in the Sefer HaMinhagim, that you should take the arava together with the dalet minim, that might reflect the sheet of the Ra'ah, that when Abishol has a special ribui because it says arve in plural for another mitzvah arava, he means the another mitzvah arava together with the arava that's with the lulav.
But why would he interpret that arava and mikdash is the, you take it in your hand? They also have the aravot that sit on the mizbeach.
Right, but that's a different arava. He's talking about the halacha of usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim, and he says that since you take the lulav and all four minim on every day of Sukkot, and that's a Doraisa, that's a mitzvah shel Torah in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, when we have an extra arava, we mean to add the arava as an addendum, as a tosefes, to the basic mitzvah of smachtem es Hashem Elokeichem. Okay, fine. Now, this is all good according to Abishol, because Abishol takes the word arve, the plural, he's not going to use it as we saw in the Braisa on Daf, Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, to include Shel Baal and Shel Harim. He's going to use the word Arve to include Migdash. Now, the Chachamim, back on Daf, Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, they use the word, the plural word Arve, to be Marbe, even if it's not Nachal, it doesn't grow next to the river. So how are they going to derive the conclusion? The Gemara assumes that nobody denies that there's a mitzvah Arava all 7 days in the Migdash. For Rabbanan L'Migdash Minolan. So the premise of this cache in the Gemara is that you can only derive one conclusion from one pasuk. In other words, the ribui here of Arve in the plural can only teach you one din. If it's teaching you another kind of Arava, it's not teaching you another category of a mitzvah. And the Gemara answers, Hilchasa Gemira Lahu. The Rabbanan had a tradition of what we call Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, that there's a separate mitzvah, the Arava, in the Migdash as a mitzvah Arava. They don't need the Pasuk Arve Nachal to include and be Mechadesh that there's a mitzvah Arava in the Beis HaMikdash. They know that by virtue of Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. The Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, otherwise called Hilchos HaGemira Leh, replaces the need for a Pasuk. Now, you and I know that sometimes there's a difference in halacha between that which is explicit in the pasuk and that which is derived from a pasuk. And something which is explicit in the pasuk has a lot more of a serious heavy kind of halachic status. But not so in the case of a Kabbalah Misinai. If it's a Hilchasa Gemirah, that has the exact same status as a pasuk in Chumash. Although I have to tell you that there's machlokas rishonim, again, I don't want to get into it now, about Arla and Chutzlartz. Arla and Chutzlartz is halacha l'moshe misinai. Because if you look in the pasuk, the parash in Kedoshim, the Torah says, ki tavol el artzachem. So it's only in Eretz Yisrael. Arla and Chutzlartz is prohibited under halacha l'moshe misinai. And rishonim say that you don't get malchus if you eat Arla and Chutzlartz. But that doesn't mean that Arla and Chutzlartz is necessarily a different entity than Arla and Eretz Yisrael. It has the same status. They're both d'oraisa, so one is just explicit, mafurash, and the other is halacha l'moshe misinai. In Malkus, we have a special requirement. There are many different requirements in order to mete out the punishment, whatever punishment it is, in this case Malkus, and it's got to be that we can warn him based on something that's written in the pasuk. So if we're warning him based on halacha l'moshe misinai, then we relieve him of a chiv malchus, even though he's violating the same identical isur. So he eats arla chas v'shalom in Eretz Yisrael, he gets malchus. He eats arla in Chutz Laretz, arla that grew in Brooklyn, New York, and in that case there's no pasuk in the Chumash that tells you that it's arla, but it's halacha l'moshe misinai. He violates the same identical isur, but as far as malchus is concerned, we alleviate him of malchus because it's not explicit in the Torah. Here, in the case of a mitzvah, like a Rav and Migdash, as a separate independent mitzvah, there's no difference between Arve Nochel and Abishol's frame of reference, the extra rebuild of Arve in the plural, and Halacha L'moshe Misinai. Both of them put the mitzvah of a Rav and Migdash on the same level of a Doraisa. This is a mitzvah Doraisa and Migdash. So amongst the many mitzvahs that we're missing today, because we don't have the Migdash, we can add this to the list, the mitzvah of a Rav called Shiva. Now, what's going to boggle my mind here is the Gemara later on is going to tell us that something called Chilfa Gila, I mean, we all know what Chilfa Gila is, right?
No, I don't know what it is either.
But it's some sort of an Arava. It's called a Chilfa Gila. We'll get to it in just 5 minutes. That we know that that's kosher. And that's a big chiddush because Chilfa Gila actually looks very much like a tzaftzafa. It actually has ridges. It's serrated on the outside of each olive, each leaf. But the Gemara says that we're going to derive that Chilfa Gila is kosher for the mitzvah Arava based on the pasuk Arve Nachal. The plural of the word Arve is coming to be Marve Chilfa Gila. Now I don't know why the Gemara is comfortable with that. I would have been very uncomfortable with that. We already use the word Arve Nachal to derive something else. Either to derive an Arava that doesn't grow next to the Nachal, like Baal or Harim, or to derive the separate mitzvah of Arava in the Migdash. Now you're using Arve Nachal to derive a Chilfa Gila. So I don't know how that works. I'm just going to ask, okay, let's get into it as we go along. Now the Gemara says the following. The Omer of Asi, Omer of Yochanan. Now, Rashi explains that there was a Talmud who was in the Beis Medrash and he knew what he thought was the entire gamut of Hilchasa Gemir Lei, all the Halacha L'moshe Misinai. And Rabbi Yochanan was mechadish to him three extra Hilchasa Gemir Lei that he didn't know about. And these are the three that Rabbi Yochanan taught him. One is called Eser Netios, the other is called Arava, which means to take the Arava in the Beis Hamikdash and wrap it and carry it around the Mizbeah. And then there's Nisach HaMayim, which means when they brought the Korban Tomid on Tomid Shel Shachar on Chagas Sukkos, they added, in addition to Niske Yayin, which is a classical kind of Nisachim, they added Niske Mayim. All of Simchas Pesach Shoeva, the celebrations of Sukkot, are all around this mitzvah, which is called Nisach HaMayim. And where does it say Nisach HaMayim in the Torah? Nowhere. It's derived from a halacha l'moshe misinai. So let's go through the three. The first one is called Eser Netios. Okay, now Eser Netios has to do with Shvius. You know, the seventh year, you're not allowed to plant. And not only aren't you allowed to plant on the seventh year, but even before you enter into the seventh year, which is called 1 month, the month of El, going into the Shemitah year, that's called Tosefes Shviz. That's the additional, or shall I say, the expanded Shviz. But now, what he has here is a base Sa'ah. A base Sa'ah is a certain area, which is the equivalent of 250 square amos, 50 amos on each side, 50 square. And he plants within that area Eser Ilanos, which are called Netios. The word Netios means when he plants a new tree, a very young sapling, I guess you'd call it. And these 10 saplings are spread out. You know, you want to give each sapling room for its roots to grow. So you spread it out in the base saw. And they're equidistant one from the other. Now, normally, amongst the various prohibitions that apply on Shviyas, and now we're talking about El 30 days before Shviyas, one of them is called Harisha, right, which is called plowing in English. You're not allowed to plow the fields. They have to be left fallow. But in the case of Eser Netios, where it's very young and very vulnerable, the Netios have not yet secured themselves in the ground, and we need the Harisha. Now, in order to appreciate the Harisha here, you have to know a Gemara of all places in Periklal Gadol, in Shabbos. The Gemara says that in Eretz Yisrael they had two types of Harisha. They had one Harisha before the planting, and they had another Harisha after the planting. And the reason for the second Harisha in Eretz Yisrael is because the ground was very tough, and they needed to soften the ground and then cover the plant with soil. And then the plant itself, the roots of the plant, were now sandwiched in between one layer of soil below it and another layer of soil on top of it. Now, in the case of these Netios, which are brand new saplings, very young and very vulnerable, very fragile, if you will, you had to do this Harisha in order to guarantee that they would survive. And we have a Hilchasag Miralon that on Shviyas, Malacha for the sake of survival, not to necessarily, you've already planted these saplings, so you're not planting new saplings, they're already in the ground way before Shviyas, but they haven't yet taken root, and therefore the Torah allows Harisha, in these cases of the young saplings, in order to guarantee that they would survive. Arava, that's the second case that the Talmud heard from Rabbi Yochanan. That's the mitzvah of how do you say in English? Circulating? No, not circulating. Circumfering the Mizbeach. No, that's not how you say
it. Circuiting.
Circuiting, excellent. Circuiting the Mizbeach.
Circumscribing.
Oh, that I don't know. Circumscribing, I think, means something else. There. But I think. I'm not going to fight with you because I'm sure your knowledge of English is better than mine.
Making circuits. You're making circuits.
Yeah, circuiting, I think. Circumfering is something else. Anyway, then we get to Nisach HaMai. So all these are Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. And on the list we have Arava, and that's why the Chachamim don't need the Pasuk of Arveh, which they're going to use in order to include an Arava that doesn't grow near the river. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, Arveh Nachal. If you take this literally, Agdelos Al HaNachal. So when is an Arava kosher? Because it grows near the river, Prat, to the exclusion with Tzavtzifa, meaning Tzavtzifa is a min, it's a different species of an arava, and it doesn't grow near the nachal. Now all other species of arava, the real Makoy arava that's kosher, that grows near the nachal. You can already plant it elsewhere, but you know that you've identified the species in the case, remember this Phil from yesterday? In the case of the tzavtzifa, we're talking about a different species, a different min of an arava, and it grows not near the nachal. And we're going to soon see how do you identify the tzavtzifa, right? As I said before, it's going to have olim that are very rigid edges on the outside, like serrated. Hagdela ben ahorim, where does the tzavtzifa grow? Again, you can replant it, but it grows in the mountainous areas. Omar Rab Zera, my krah, is there any pasuk that would tell me that the tzavtzifa has an inferior status to the other aravos? And the answer is a pasuk in Yechezkel, when the Navi is giving harsh rebuke to the people of Israel. He says, Kach al mayim rabim, you could have taken al mayim rabim, meaning you could have taken a beautiful arava that would have flourished And instead, Tzavtzefa, some of what you put in its place, you put a Tzavtzefa. Apparently, a Tzavtzefa here symbolizes that the Jewish people went a little bit sour. No, it's Kilkelu Maaseihem. We say they didn't live up to the standards of the Torah, and that's why the Navi here is coming down very hard on them. And in order to illustrate that they came down hard, that the Yechezkel HaNavi says that they deviated from the Torah, he says that instead of it being the Arava of Halmayim Rabim, the Arava that flourishes because it grows near the Nachal, instead you made it into a Tzavtzefa. So you see clearly from this drasha of Rabbi Zeira that the Tzavtzefa is an inferior kind of Arava. Omale Abai turns to Rabbi Zeira, he says, V'dilma perushe kama farish. Maybe you should read it this way. Kachal mayim rabim, kama, umayim ninu. And what is this arava that grows? Al mayim rabim tzavtzefa. Maybe the tzavtzefa is really defining the al mayim rabim. And the answer is, in Cain, if that would be the case, my somo. Somo means you replaced it. And if you're telling me there's only one arava here in this pasuk, namely a tzavtzefa, then you didn't replace it. You can only replace something if the pasuk indicates two different aravas. So there's one arava which is called mayim rabim arava, and then there's another arava which is called what? The tzavtzefa arava. And you ruined it, you blew it. Instead of maintaining the beauty of the Almayim Rabim Arava, you reduced it and diminished it down to the lowest status of the Tzavtzefa. That's Samo. Samo, you made it into a Tzavtzefa. And you see clearly that a Tzavtzefa is what's called a Min Garua. It's a lower level, a second class Arava. We don't want to take it. Now, Rabosei, it's very interesting that in Tanakh, the Arava is called Almayim Rabim. Because if you go through the Hoshanas that we recite, and especially on Hoshana Rabbah, you'll see it's all about water. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't live in such an agricultural society like they did then. You know, now it's high tech here in Israel, and also we're doing very well in other fields, Baruch Hashem, medical research, many different fields that were breaking new ground. I mean, I always, every day I thank the Israelis for ways. You know, that's if it works. It doesn't always work. And there's so much technology, but back in the day, Israel was an agricultural... Now, the problem is that we're totally dependent upon God. You know, no one can deny that, because we need the rains. And there's not always ample rains in Israel. We haven't had too many good rains in the last couple of years. But it's interesting that the one of the four species that we isolate and we single out for praying for rain is the Arava, otherwise known as the Hoshana, and we have Hoshanas. If you look in the Hoshanas, they're all about rain. They're all about water coming down from it. And it's interesting that Yechezkel, when he wants to describe the Arava, he calls it Mayim Rabim. The Tzavtzefa is up there in the mountains. And that's a second-rate kind of thing. Om Rabbi Yavo, Om Rabbi Kodesh Baruch, Ani Amarti, She'iyu Yisrael Lefonai, Kekach Al Mayim Rabim. The people of Israel should be like this pasuk that says, Kach Al Mayim Rabim, that the beautiful Arava that flourishes near the water, U'mayinu Arava, Behain, but they unfortunately Samu Atzman, they made themselves in Ketzavtzefa Shebaharim, which is a Min Garua. Ika Demasne Lahaikra Amasnison. Some have this drasha of Yechezkel on the Mishnah itself, the Tanitz himself. Kachal Mayim Rabim Tzavtzefa Samo, and this is how he's going to derive the conclusion that Tzavtzefa is Psula. Which is interesting because he starts with the Pasuk Arvei Nachal and he excludes Tzavtzefa as a separate min, but apparently that's not enough, because even though the Tzavtzefa is a separate min and it grows naturally in the mountainous areas, but nevertheless we've already seen that you can take an Arava tree that grows near the Nachal and you can replant it. So maybe the Tzavtzefa should fit in the same category. How do you know that Al Nachal is coming to exclude Dafka of all the different species of an Arava? You exclude the Tzavtzefa, and that's what the Braisa was adding here, that Tzavtzefa Soma. And then again, Rabbi Zeira asked this question, Maskefle Rabbi Zeira, Vedilma Perushi Koma Farej, Kachal Mayim Rabim Mayim Ninu, a Tzavtzefa, Imkei Mayim Soma, and Omer Rabbi Avo, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Amarti Shu Yisrael Fonaki Kachal Mayim Rabim, Mayim Ninu Amrova, Vehem Soma Zatzmon, Ketzavtzefa Shebahor. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a brice. Now this brice is very important because now that you've told me that there's a min arava, a species of arava called the tzaftifa, which is possible. How do I know? Maybe I'll be fooled and I'll think, hey, this is an arava. It's not a tzaftifa. How do I identify an arava? How do I identify a tzaftifa? So this brice gives us three simonim of an arava and three simonim of a tzaftifa. Ezu tzaftifa.
Ezu arava.
I'm sorry. Ezu arava. Ezu tzaftifa. Arava is kanesh Allah adon. So the stem itself is red, reddish in color. Vi alesh Allah mashuch. Okay, and it's elliptical inside in shape. And not only that, piach halak, meaning the round part of the outside of the ole is smooth. It has no ridges. It has no pgimos. It's not like a saw. Tzaftzif, on the other hand, is kanishal alavan. Its stem is white. Ole shala agol. Instead of being elliptical, it's round. And piodomal magal. And the outside of the leaf looks like a sickle. In other words, it's got very sharp points. Now here, my friends, we have to see Tosus Divya Maskal Kanishala. And it's very interesting. Tosus doesn't ask a question, but he answers the question. We can figure out from his answer what was bothering him. He says the following, Kevan de Piresh Simoni Arava Havisagi. Why did the Brisa feel compelled to give us not only the Simoni Arava, but also the Simoni Tzaftzifa? If you would have given me the Simoni Arava, I would have derived that a Tzaftzifa is possible, because a Tzaftzifa doesn't have the Simoni of the Arava. So why do you have to give it to me on both sides? You know, why do you have to describe the Tzaftzifa? I don't need to describe the Tzaftzifa. Describe to me the requirements of an Arava Kshera, and then I know that a Tzaftzifa doesn't fit those requirements. Says Tosfos, Ella, what was the Brisa trying to teach me by giving me the simonim of a tzaftzifa? Lahachshir, af, I would add the word arava, af, she'ein bo gimel simonim. In other words, what happens, asks Tosfos, if I have an arava, and I'm trying to identify it, is it the aravic shera or is it a tzaftzifa? And guess what? It doesn't have all three simonim of an arava. And Tosus gives an example. Kigon chilfa gila. You remember our favorite chilfa gila arava. And that chilfa gila has two out of the three of the simonim of an arava kshera, but it's lacking one of the three simonim. We're going to soon see it has rough edges. Leficha katani simonei tzaftifa lememar dafka hani. Meaning only if it has all three simoni tzaftifa, then you can identify it as a tzaftifa. So according to Tosus, it comes out that if you have a potential candidate as an arava, it has, let's say, one of the simonim of an arava, it has two simonim of the tzaftifa, what would be its status?
Possible.
No, it'd be kosher. Why?
Because it has the three.
Because only if it has all three simonim tzaftifa. Meaning, why did the Brisa go out of its way to give me three simonim for tzaftifa? Just tell me, what are the three simonim I need for an arava? The answer is, because, again, there are three simonim of an arava, that's true, and a healthy, perfect, beautiful species arava, you know, first-class arava will have all three simonim, but as long as it has one of these three simonim, you know it's an arava, and it's kosher. How do I know such a thing? Says Tosus, that justifies the Sefer, the Brisa. Why did the Sefer, the Brisa, have to delineate the three simonim of a tzaftifa to tell you that when is it a tzaftifa? Only if it has what?
All three
simonim of the tzaftifa. Now I have an arava. It has one simon of a tzaftifa, two simonim of an arava. And Tosus says, now let me go the other way around. It has, let's say it has two simonim of a tzaftifa. That's what I wanted to ask you. It has two simonim of a tzaftifa and one simon of an arava. Everybody?
Arava.
It's kosher. Why? Because it doesn't have all three simonim of a tzaftifa. And this to me, I don't know, I find this very revolutionary, because we have a principle of Rov. You know, if you don't have all the Siman, at least have the majority of the Siman.
Why does that only work in one direction, though?
Yeah. David, what were you going to say? Then I'll come back to you.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah. Why does it work only in one direction?
Meaning that you need, in order for it to be a tzatzifah, you need all three simanim, but in order to be an arava,
right? So
you only need a minimum
right.
of one of the
right.
simanim.
So it works like this.
Good question.
What the Braisa does in the Reisha is look for one of these three simanim, and you know it's an arava. And how do I know that that's what the Braisa means? I could have said, look for all three simanim, and then you know it's an arava. You know, there are two ways of learning the ratio of this Braisa. The Braisa delineates three simanim and aravic shape. Does it mean A or does it mean B? Does it mean A, I have to have all three simanim, or does it mean B, find one of those three simanim? So now I'm in the dark. I really don't know what the Braisa has in mind. And then I read the Sefer, the Braisa. The Sefer, the Braisa, is going to shed a light on the ratio. And it's going to tip the scale in favor of one of our two alternative possibilities, whether it means you have to have all three simanim to be an arava, or one of the three. Because the Braisa goes and tells me how to identify a tzatzifah. Why did Braisa have to tell me that? If the halacha in the ratio was you need all three simanim in order to be what? In order to be kosher. In order to be an arava kshera. So stop there. Quit while you're ahead, as we say. Kol Mosim Korea. Why are you telling me now what the simanim are of a tzavtzavah? A tzavtzavah has absolutely zero simanim of an arava. If it has no simanim of an arava, then we know it's possible, because you need all three simanim. And let me go a step further. If you need all three simanim, if that's the pshat, then if you're missing one of those three simanim, then you know it's a tzavtzavah. It can't be kosher. So why did the Braisa have to go ahead and tell me the simanim of the tzavtzavah? Zoktosis, the Braisa wants to be chadish, a gevaldig chiddush, that it's only a tzavtzavah if it has all three simanim, which are antithetical to the three simanim of an arava. So that would mean, therefore, says Tosfos, that if it has only one of the simanim of the tzavtzavah, and I'm adding even two simanim of the tzavtzavah, it has one siman of the arava, that's good enough. So now we go back to the ratio, we interpret the Braisa in the following way. Here are the three simanim of the arava. Go find something that has one of those three simanim. I'm giving you three options. All you have to do is discover an arava that has one of those three simanim. And that's going to be enough to be machshir the arava. Now, in the back of my Masifta, we have something called Yalkut HaBiurim, and he quotes a number of Rishonim who are not happy with this Tosfos. They think that if two out of the three of Simonim are a Tzavtzifah, then it's already a Tzavtzifah. It's not enough to have one Simon of the Arov.
It's interesting, though, because if you look at the actual text, the construction of the description of the Arava is exactly parallel to that of the description of this, like they don't even like the ooh, the you know, and you know, it, like they don't even change that to indicate that.
Where is the indication of all this? It's in the fact that the Braisa didn't apply the principle of quit while you're ahead.
Right. That it gives a now. It uses the fact that it gave the description of the tzatzifah,
which is totally unnecessary.
Right.
And that's what Tosfos builds his case on.
Otherwise, you wouldn't need it.
Right.
Okay.
Now, all this discussion that we're having now becomes relevant when we get to the case that we're about to study now, which is called the Chilfa Gila. Right? I have a niece by the name of Gila, but she spells it with a hey at the end, because that's happiness. And frankly speaking, I don't know what the word Gila means with an aleph at the end. I have a feeling that it's the name of a place somewhere in Babylonia. I don't know, but I'm not sure. So the Gemara asks the following. For Atanya, we have a Braisa. And the Braisa says, Dome Elamagal Kosher, but Dome Elamasar Posul. There are two kinds of grated leaves, or serrated leaves. There's one that's Dome Elamagal. Magal, if you know, goes in a round shape, sort of, which means that there are pegimos, there are sharp points on the outside of the leaf, but they point all in one direction. That's called Dome Elamagal. Then there's something called Dome Elamasar, where the points are vertical, they go straight up, just like a saw. Right? If you take a look at the saw, right? The points go one teepee, another teepee, another triangle. Now, how do we identify whether this arava is kshera or not? The Brisa says that if it's only Domo L'Magdal, it doesn't have this radical, extreme kind of saw look. In other words, it's just, it has points to it, but they all turn towards one direction, like a Magdal, then it's kosher. And the Gemara now says that that's a contradiction to what we learned in the Brisa, because the Brisa that we just learned said that to identify the Arava, one of the simonim of an Aravic Sheira is Pia Chalak. And on the other side, meaning a Tzavtzafo, which is apostle of Arava, that's called Pia Doma L'Magal. So what are you telling me that Doma L'Magal is kosher? Omar Abaye, Kitanya, Hahi, the second Brisa, is Bechilfa Gila. So again, as I said before, we all know what a chilfa gila looks like. Again, I probably never came across it, but what I do know about a chilfa gila is that it does have pointed, serrated edges around the leaf, but they all point in one direction. And that makes it similar to a magal. And it's kosher. Why is it kosher? Why is a chilfa gila kosher?
Kosher for Hoshana is not
for Arava, right? Chilfa Gila is now being defined not only as a species of Arava, that we knew, but what we didn't know is that it's a kosher species for an Arava. It can be used as Hoshana. Why? Because it's Dome Lemagel, and it's not Dome Lemasar. Okay, but wait a second. Does it have all three simonim of an Arava Kshera? So the Gemara says, "Om Rabbi, Shma mina achilfa gila kashal Hoshana." And if you'll tell me pshita, we know it's a species of Hoshana of Arava. The answer is Maud and Tamar. I would have thought hold the Isle Shem Levi. Okay. So wait. You know what? I just want to make one point before we go on. This Gemara pshita is a very difficult Gemara, and honestly, I tried to work on it. I didn't come up with any solution. Because, what do you mean pshita? How can you tell me pshita? After all, the chilfa gila does not have the first of the three simonim of an arava. Or, actually, it's the third of the three simonim, sorry. On the list of the three simonim that we saw in the Braisa, we had Kana Shala Adom, we had Ola Shala Mashuch, and then the third one is Pia Chalak. You can't say and describe the chilfa gila as pia chalak, but somehow the Gemara understood that okay, it's not pia chalak, but it has other redeeming features. Either it has kana adam, or it has ola mashuch, the elliptical shape, and therefore it definitely has at least one of the three simanim of an aravik shera. And according to Tosus, as we just learned, if it has one of the three simonim of the Aravak Shera, then what? Kasher. It's kosher. So therefore the Gemara asks Pshita. Again, I never would have said that that's Pshita. I would have thought that maybe if one of the simonim is identical to that of a Tzavtzufa, because it's not Pia Chalok like an Aravak Shera, but it's rather Doma L'Magal, that itself would possible it. No. The answer is that one strike and you're not out. It's only three strikes and you're out. If you don't have any of the simonim and arav, it's possible. Chilfa gila has one or maybe even two out of the three simonim of an aravak shera. So therefore, the Gemara asks, why did Abai have to make this big dramatic statement that chilfa gila is kashal oshana? Wouldn't I understand that since it has two out of the three of simonim of an aravak shera, or one out of the three of simonim, that's sufficient? The answer is, I would have excluded a chilfa gila for another reason. And that's called Shem Levi. So Rav Bosa, you may recall that we already encountered this concept called Shem Levi. We were talking about Hadassim that come from Egypt, if you remember. And those were very good Hadassim. And we thought that maybe we should exclude those Hadassim from Egypt because they had a Shem Levi. Those, you didn't just call it Oshana. I'm sorry, not a Hoshana, what was it? It was Asa. Asa is the Aramaic for Hadas. You didn't call it a Hadas, but you call it an Asa Mitzara. It was an additional adjective that was added as an addendum to its name. So it really has a different name. And here too, we don't call this Chilfa Gila an Arava, we call it a Chilfa Gila. Everybody on the street knows it as a Chilfa Gila. In fact, I went down the block here on... At Magali Yavne, and I asked him for a Chilfa Gila. He gave me five of them on the spot. Just kidding. But anyway, it's called a Chilfa Gila. That's how it's known. So maybe we'll open up a little shop over here. We'll call it the Chilfa Gila shop, and we'll sell this Sarov.
Open up in
Gila, yeah, Chilfa Gila.
Would they cost more or less?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. You see, people are going to be very hesitant. They're going to say, "Listen, Rabbi, you know this is a Chilfa Gila. That's not an Arava. Don't try to point me off with a Chilfa Gila. I want an Arava, and my side says Chilfa Gila." So I'm going to tell him that he's right in the Havavina, because the Gemara says Ma'u Detema, that since you call it a Chilfa Gila, it's not kosher as an Arava. Kamash Malon, but the final maskana is, and that's what we see clearly from the Braisa and from the statement of Abai, that a Chilfa Gila is kosher for an Arava. So I want to tell you, Rabosa, if you can get me a Chilfa Gila, I would pay you an extra commission for that, because I'm really excited to use a Chilfa Gila. Even though, again, its mouth looks like a magal. It's like, you know, it's kind of sharp there with the ridges, the edges. But the Gemara says it's kosher. If the Gemara says it's kosher, that's what I want. And nobody called it an Arava Shota.
The truth is,
like the case of a
only Hadasha. Here I've seen willows like they have here, and in Chutz Haaretz where they have the weeping willow. So it's Aleh, it's not red, and it's serrated, but they use it.
They use it as an Arava.
So
it's not red, and it's serrated. So what redeeming factor? Oh, I know what it is. It probably has elliptical shaped leaves.
It's long. Oh, okay. And
serrated. So I can't tell you if it's a Chilfa Gila. Maybe it is.
It was a weeping. What do they use in America? Like weeping willow?
I don't know.
Do they have willows like here?
Weeping willow is a tree.
Yeah. Last time I spent Sukkot in America was before my Bechor.
No. Our neighbors had Arava's bushes. I mean, yeah. It didn't necessarily grow like a tree. So
the Gemara now, Eimah Hachinami. Maybe this guy who doesn't want to buy my Chilfa Gila is right. After all, it has a Shem Levi. So the Gemara says, Arve Nachal Amrachmona Mikol Makom. That the plural use of the word Arve comes to include Chilfa Gila, for that matter, any Arava which is missing one or maybe even two of the simonim of an Arava. And our paradigm case is Chilfa Gila, and that's kosher. And that's derived from the extra, from the plural of Arve. Now I'm perplexed about this, as I mentioned to you earlier. We use the word Arve for one of two reasons. According to Tanakhama and the Braisa, we used it to include an Arava that doesn't grow next to the Nachal. And according to Abishol, we used it to include to generate a whole new mitzvah, which is called the Arava in the Beis HaMikdash. So why do I have a right now to turn around and use the Arve for another purpose to teach me that even if it doesn't have all three simonim of an Arav, it's still kosher, like the case of Chilfa Gila? Nobody seems to ask this question. I don't know.
Shiva Panavatov.
But usually the rule of thumb is that if you have a drasha, then you can only use it once. In fact, that's why the Gemara had to introduce the Hilchos HaGemira. Because according to Rabbanan, who needed Arve Nachal in the plural in order to derive the Arav and the Har, or the Arav and the Beis HaBaal, I can't derive the Mitzvah Migdash from the same Arve, because he... Just one second, maybe... Ben, you have an answer, which I just want to think for a second. Maybe I can come up with an answer, then I want to hear your answer, but... Maybe... Yeah, what do you say, man?
No, I'm saying, does anyone have the opinion that Arve just means you need at least two to fulfill the mitzvah?
That's interesting. That's going to come up.
Singular praises are singular.
That's going to come up in the next mission.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't think, I promise.
Okay. You see, if this Chilfa Gila grows in a mountainous area, so then maybe what the Gemara is telling me is that Arve means it doesn't have to grow near a Nachal. And that teaches me two things.
That, well, we know that already.
So that's what I'm suggesting, that maybe what the Gemara is establishing here based on Arve is that you don't need a species that grows near the Nachal. Just one second. And there, so why is Tzav Tzufa excluded? We said Arve Nachal Prat L'Tzav Tzufa, because Tzufa grows nearly in the mountainous areas. And Chilfa, where's Chilfa? Chilfa Gil, I guess, grows near a Nachal, but you could just replant it. See, what I was trying to do is, I was trying to be Makaris or a Chokim here, that maybe we can take the case of Baal or Harim and take the case of Chilfa Gila and put them all together in one category. They're all being excluded from the plural, from the plural of the word Arve. And the Chiddush is that it doesn't grow near a Nachal. And the fact that it doesn't grow near the Nachal, maybe just that explains in the world of botany why it doesn't have those same phenomena. It doesn't have the same expressions, the same phenomena as a classical Arav. You understand what I'm suggesting? That maybe Chilfa Gila is something like Minaharim or Mistei Abal, and that the reason why it looks the way it looks and it has a very sharp mouth is because it doesn't grow near the Nachal, and therefore we could include it under the Arve Nachal. Don't think Nachal, but even Arve Nachal. I don't know. Let me not pontificate here. I'm just trying to figure out how the Gemara derives so many different things from the same pasuk. And the Gemara itself objects to doing so.
These are the other characteristics are all physical, not.
Yeah, all these characteristics are physical. Everything here is physical. I mean, you could give spiritual interpretation.
No, not where it grows, I mean. Where it grows is not a physical characteristic. So that's the way it looks.
Why? Why isn't it physical? If it doesn't grow near somewhere,
no,
that's
these
physical.
Are things, no? This is the way the leaf looks. These are all describing the physical appearance of the leaf.
Right. You're talking about this price that we're doing now.
Yes.
Yeah. The other Bryce is describing location, you're saying. Is that
right.
What you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, that's also physical, but okay, now I understand what you're saying.
Rav
Chisda. Okay, now this Gemara, let's see, what time is it? Gee. I'm really tempted to skip this whole Gemara here. I hate skipping, but. Alright, well, I'm going to run through this Gemara here and. You'll decide if you want to write a whole book here on this Gemara. I mean, this is so it's so off the beaten path for our purposes. But anyway, Omar Rav Chisda, you know, Hani Tlas Mili Ish Tani Shmayu Michi Charev Beis Hamikdash. So he wants to give three examples of phenomenon in nature that after the Churban, they changed their names. There was a name change after the Churban. I don't know if he means because of the Churban or just in a new period of time after the Churban. Now, each one of these name changes goes from one extreme to the other. For example, Chilfisa. Now, the word Chilfisa, in its original form, was called a tzaftzifa. The first name of the tzaftzifa was Chilfasa. And now its name is Arvasa. And that's very confusing because if you call it Arvasa, you think it's kosher when it's really possible. And on the contrary, Arvasa, something that was originally called Arfasa, which means it was kosher, now it's called Chilfasa. And people who remember the old name of Chilfasa, they remember that was a tzaftzifa. Everything is confusing now. But my nafkamina, why did Rav Chisda want to point this out to us? Lululav. And basically he's telling us, Rav Chisda, that if today somebody sells you Arvasa, be very careful, because probably the Arvasa is the Chilfasa. And the Chilfasa is possible, it's a tzaftzifa. But on the other hand, if he sells you Chilfasa, you can buy it and use it for your Dalmina. Now the pella to me about this whole sugi is that after we've gone through the Simanim, who cares what he calls it? You know, the guy could sell you, you know, he could chashol, you know, cheat you and misrepresent it. I don't care whether he calls it a chilfasa or he calls it arvasa. Let's look at it. I mean, that's why you take it to a rabbi, right? He's going to look at it. He's going to determine if it's an arava or not. So it could be that what the Gemara is saying is that you and I would have said if he calls it a chilfasa, and even if it looks like an Arava, you shouldn't buy it, because the very fact that he admits that it's called a Chilfasa, that means it's a Tzafsifa. But the answer is no. Its original name was Chilfisa, and he may be using that, but Chilfisa today is really an Arava. So don't think that he means the old time Chilfisa, pre-Migdash. No, he means today's Chilfisa, which is really a Kosher Arava. Enochinami, you saw the Simanim, but you were confused because he told you that it belonged to the family called Chilfisa. So you got all flustered and you said, I'm not going to buy this because if it's a Chilfisa, it's got to be a Tzavtzma. I'm not going to buy that. All right, now we go on to Hilchos Shofar, which is very good. It's Erev Rosh Hashanah. It can't be coincidental. So in the old days, a classical shofar, which is called kafuf, you know, it's bent, and it has a bend to it, right? That's called a kafuf. In the old days, that was called a shipura. Shipura is the Aramaic of a shofar. And then after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, they started calling it a chatzotzra. Chatzotzrita. Now, chatzotzrita is a trumpet. That's not a shofar. But in fact, the word chatzotzra, here in this context, again, we don't mean a trumpet as we know it as a trumpet, but rather we mean a shofar that's absolutely straight, and it's not kafuf. So therefore, in the old days, before the Churban HaBayis, if somebody wanted to sell you shipura and say, use this for the mitzvah shofar, you would buy it. If he tried to sell you something which he called a chatzotzarta, which means it's flat, straight across, then don't buy it, because we need a shofar kafuf. And that's based on the aisle of Yitzhak Avinu. The aisle, which I think in English is called a ram, correct me if I'm wrong, and that has a round horn. However, now everything became upside down. After the Churban HaBayis, Chatzotzarta is the word that replaces the shofar, and that's kafuf. And shipura, now we use to describe a pashut. Pashut means a straight shofar, like a trumpet. Minaf kemidu shofar shel Rosh Hashanah. So you have to really know. Again, here it's a pella. Again, I don't understand. He's selling you a shofar, right? Well, what is it? Is it kafuf? Is it not kafuf? I mean, you're not blind. Why is it? Who cares what he calls it? Let's say he called it a beanie bong. I don't care. Let's make up a name. What difference does it make? I can see it's a shofar. The whole Gemara here defies my understanding. And the Gemara goes on with another case. Piturta. In the old days, it was a small table, and it was called a pitura. And now everything changed. There's a pitura, which is a longer table, and now the pitura, which was in the old days a small table, is now called a large table. Piturta is now used to describe the small table. What mitzvah is involved in a table? And the Gemara says, lemekachu memkach. Has to do with ordering. I sent you an order for a small table, and you delivered a long table. And now you want to charge me double. Or I sent you an order for a long table, and I paid you good bucks for that, and now you deliver me a small table. So the answer is, can I have any claim? And it all depends on what it says in the contract. If the contract uses this word, then you know that the deal was made on a small table. So you have to know what the word means. David?
We had a sugya a few minutes ago. You mentioned shame something with the rabbi. If it was a shame,
shame levar,
which means that the name is changed or different.
No, different.
Okay, so by the rabbi we said by shame levar, then it's possible. So here we're saying I'm saying similar things with the shame.
You mean in the Maal Dutamer? Yeah, David's saying according to the Maal Dutamer that we should passel it because shame levar. Before we have the drosh of arve lemaskana, we don't care about the shame levar. But in the Hava meaning that we care about the shame levar. This whole thing would be very relevant because now it has a shame levad.
Good question.
Okay, but we paskin that Arvei Nochal Lamaskona, it doesn't matter what the shame levad is. By the way, the Rishonim here go to town because at the end of the day, the Gemara says the difference between this table and that table is no get to Dini Momenus, the Mekach Umemkar, because you have to live up to the order and it says in the contract X and you delivered Y. The Gemara could have used that to answer up all the questions that we had. Because let's say, for example, I ordered a chilfta, and instead you delivered an aravta, or vice versa. Or I ordered a shipura, and you delivered a chatzotzarta. So why do we have to come up with this in the case of a table? So the Rishonim basically answered that the mekach u'memkar answer, that's like a fallback. That's like the desperate answer out of desperation. The best answer to be given is as halachic significance in terms of a kiyum mitzvah. You know, I need an arava, not a tzavtzafa. I need a shofar that shall aisle is kofuf and not a Yaal Poshut, which is straight. Omar Abaye, Abaye says, I'm going to also add a name change to this list of name changes. Afani Omer, Bei Kasei, Hovlila. And Hovlila became a Bei Kasei. Alright, so for this I need a picture. I have actually, I didn't bring it. I have the Hebrew Schottenstein Gemara on Chulin on Treifus. See, it has a picture of all the Treifus. So these are all the kishkis of the animal. And you have to know whether it's called Beis HaKosos, and therefore you have to be very careful, or it's a different part of the innards of the animal called a Mesas, and the dinim change. So for example, if you're looking for what's called a Male Gera, so you're going to have to look in the Mesas. Anyway, the names of these parts of the animal changed. L'may nafkimina, L'machat ha-nimsa ba'ovi beis ha-kosos. Okay, so this has to do with the laws of treifa. So after you shechted the animal, you open up these kishkes, the innards, and you find in the beis ha-kosos a needle. The animal actually swallowed a needle. That's one of the classical cases of a treifa. And if the needle penetrated into the dofen, the wall, the outer membrane of the beis hakosos, then it has the status of just 1 second. Or a dofen shelo ove the osu mishnei oros is then, if it's not mefulash, then it's not a treif. If it's mefulash, then it's a treif. So again, if the needle penetrates into this part of the animal in the innards, then if it went all the way in from one side of the aura to the other side of the aura, it's called mefulash, then it's a trefa. But you have to know what, you know, to identify what it's called. Like for example, in Hilchus Shechita, there's this whole simon called the kurkavan. Right? So there's a very famous story that a woman took a chicken to the rav, and she, you know, she found this. So he said to her, if it's the halakha kurkavan, the holy kurkuman. I mean, because again, you know, when you're learning in yeshivas, you learn a lot about the kurkuman. But he wasn't sure if that was the kurkuman. Yeah, he can tell you 15 chidushei Torah on the kurkuman, but he doesn't know what it looks like. The halakha kurkuman. Amar Rav Bar Yosef Havani Omer Bavel Bursif Bursif Bavel. Now, the name of this place changed. It was originally called Bavel, as opposed to Bursif, and now they call it Bursif. And Lamayaf Kimina says the Gemara here on Daflam and Dalet of the Beis, with Gite Noshin. Oh, this is very fascinating, because when you write it again, you have to identify exactly where it is, and if it's Chutz Laretz or it's Eretz Yisrael. So the first mission in Gittin says that if a Shliach brings a get from Chutz Laretz, then he has to recite a very famous declaration, which is called B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechta. He has to testify to the fact that this get is written Lishma, and that the Edom signed properly. There was no counterfeit. Because back in Chutz Laretz at that time, there was a lot of Amaratzis. There was a lot of ignorance. Right? And at that time, they made this Gezerah. They said if the Shliach is bringing a get from Chutz Laretz, we're not sure whether or not the halachas of Lishma were very meticulously observed. And that's the din of Chutzlitz. Now, Bavel, by the way, has a different status, because Bavel at that time was the center of Torah learning. And they relieved the Shliach of his responsibility to testify when he brought the get from Bavel, B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechta. So now it becomes, of all the nations of the world, all the locations of the world, which one is critical that we identify it as far as the laws of Gittin? That's Bavel. Why? Because Bavel has the exceptional status, and the get will be kosher even without the Shliach reciting and testifying Fani Nechta, Fani Nechta. But the problem is that we don't know what Bavel is. The Shliach says he came from Bavel. Well, if he said that before Churban Abayis, then we know he means Bavel, and he doesn't have to say Fani Nechta, Fani Nechta. But now the name is called Bursif.
So we're not sure which.
So now we know that if he says he came from Bursif, then we know he came from Bavel. But if he says he came from Bavel, we're not sure about it. This is going to be a problem. And this leads up to the next Mishnah, we'll very quickly learn the Mishnah, and then we'll end it for this week. The Mishnah records a three-way machlokes about the hadas. Now, the Mishnah actually addresses two different issues. One is a general issue in all four minim, and another is a specific issue in the hadas. As far as all four minim is concerned, you have to always ask the question, how many of each min do you have to take? So Rabbi Shmuel says, and this is very familiar to us, Shlosha Hadasim, Shtei Arovos, Lulav Echa, V'Yesrog Echad. And you and I would say that's where it should have ended. But we're going to soon see that there are other shitas, that what we do is not so partial. And then, this is the second edition, and now we're talking about Hadasim, and the Mishnah adds another issue, and that's called Ketumim. Ketumim means where the head was chopped off. So he says, Rabbi Shmuel says that of the three hadasim that you need, afilu shnayim ketumim, echad eino kotum, even if two out of the three, which represents the majority, are headless hadasim, but one of the three has a head on it, it's not kotum, it's kosher. Rabbi Tarfon goes a step further. He says, afilu shloshtam ketumim, even if in three hadasim, that's all you have is the three hadasim, and they're all headless, they're kosher, meaning even though we said that niktam rosho in a lulav is possible because hadar, you need hadar, but in the case of hadas, you don't require hadar. Now the Mishnah goes back, reverts back to its original issue, namely how many of each species do you have to take. Rabbi Akiva Omer, kishem shalulav echad v'esrog echad, nobody denies that you need one lulav, and only one lulav, one esrog, and only one esrog, is kach hadas echad v'arova achas. That all you need according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has an absolute equation between all amongst all four minim, and if two out of the four minim undeniably require nothing more than one, so then the other two minim are going to require nothing more than one. And this sets up a major machlokas here between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, whereas Rabbi Shmuel says you need three hadasim and two aravas, so Rabbi Akiva would say you need one hadas and one arava. And I was always wondering, can we rely on Rabbi Akiva? You know, 2 days ago we had Rav Chaim, he came here, he said that to find three adasim ksherim, you know, that are not shotim is almost impossible. But according to Rabbi Akiva, okay, we have to find that one adas. You know, maybe we'll be lucky, we'll find that one adas.
Didn't you say earlier that hadar is for all
minim? Hadar is, well, that's according to everyone except for Rabbi Tarfon, because Rabbi Tarfon says that no, afilu shloshtam ketumim, that there's no din of hadar at all in the case of hadas. And it's interesting because if there's no din of hadar in the case of hadas, it means you're taking it out of the equation. If you're taking it out of the equation, hence Rabbi Tarfon should agree with Rabbi Akiva that all you should need is one hadas. I don't know. We're going to have to try to figure this out. So Rabbi Bo said, before I wish you all a good Shabbos, I have two requests for you. One request is to know whether or not we're getting together on Sunday. I know many of you go to the mikvah on Sunday, and many of you are Matir Nedarim on Sunday. That has to take a lot of time. What else do we do on Sunday? We help our wives on Sunday. That's a big mitzvah. Shalom bayit. So that's the question. If you want to get together on Sunday, I'm available. Anybody here want to learn on Sunday? Raise your hand.
I want to learn, but I won't be here.
Anybody who wants to learn and will be here on Sunday? All right, so Sunday Menachem, you'll be here? All right, so look for me on Sunday. If I'm not here at 8:30... then I'm not here.
Sunday is Erev Yom Tov.
Erev Yom. Here in Eretz Yisrael. Chutz Laaretz on a different day. I'm just kidding.
No, here they'll dominate at 8 o'clock. No? Erev Yom Tov.
I just know that in the Shtiblach, where I daven, in that particular minyan, there are thousands of yonim there, but in that minyan, they start at 4:35 a.m. Wow. That's when Slichus is. So I'm going to be, I don't know how much sleep I'm going to be getting Motzi Shabbos, but I'll probably, right, Menachem, you're not going to be here? You're not sure if you're going to be here?
Yeah, I'm not sure. All
right. So what about, now here's my, actually I told you I was going to ask you two questions, but I have to ask you three questions. The second question is Yom Revi'i of next week.
Yes.
Tzom Gedalia. I think that's a good day to learn.
Yes.
At least at 8:30 to 9:30. Okay, good. So that I like. And the third question I want to ask you is, what do you want to learn after Sukkot? Jeff, maybe you could help me with this. I need to create like a a kind of a table where people could just sort of online, they could check something off. Is that very complicated?
A program where you do a
You need to be a computer genius for that?
No.
No? So what I would do is maybe to take a census, I would create, Rabbi Ossi, you listening? I would create a little bit of a table.
Right.
And I would give you a couple of options. You know, I'm thinking of certain parts of Masechta Brachos that have to do with Tefillah and Kriyas HaTorah. That has an advantage that it links itself with the Kollel. That's what they're learning in the Kollel for Smicha. I would offer Masechta Megillah so we could cover it maybe from cover to cover here by the time we get to Purim. We could offer the Sugyas of Chanukah, and then from Chanukah we could go on to the Sugyas of Pesach. I mean, we could have a lot of fun with this. And it would be more or less on this style, where there would be an 8:30, 9:30 fast-paced shiur, and then there would be a more of the Ian shiur at 11:45. Other options would be tefillin. Tefillin is a whole sugya masechta menachos, and there's also sugya at tzitzis. Get to know that. So that's what I'd like to do. You know, somebody yesterday mentioned Sanhedrin, the 11th parak of Sanhedrin, which has to do with Zakei Mamre. Have a good year. Shana Tova. I just don't know if Zakim. I would love to say Shimon Dar Zakim Mari, but it's not going to accomplish my goal over here. When we get a chance to look in Shulchan Aruch, in the Mishnah Berurah, get to know what we do in Mr. Brewer's class. You know, for those who remember my joke.
Yes, okay. I remember the gym teacher.
Yeah, the gym teacher. All right, so that's the question. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff? Am I imposing on you? I don't want to impose on you.
No.
But I just thought that maybe that would be the easiest way. And
as
then,
long as you have everybody's email.
Yeah.
And there's a program called Survey Monkey.
Survey Monkey, yeah.
So I don't have everybody's email. Do I have everybody's email? Let's assume I have most people's email. But I have to put them in a group, no?
It's not a problem. I can do the Survey Monkey.
Survey Monkey.
Yeah.
And what happens? You send it to me and then I send it out, or you go into my email? How would you want to do?
Yeah, we can do it that way. So then you get.
No, I was hoping two possibilities. So when you said, I don't know which one you like.
All of the above.
No, so it would be that you would get.